Hi, this is Pat Kennedy, and we are back for a rockin' show with Pam Colleen, my co-host and guest today. Get ready for the ride, folks. I am from Thermography Clinic London. The news of the hour is I am moving April the 1st, and I want to let my listeners know, stay tuned. If you're in the loop with me at TCL@bellnet.ca, you're going to get a blast, and you're going to find out that there will be two new locations in the London area. Very excited to have those two new locations join my Windsor and Hanover location. Night visioning your body, finding out about that inflammation that is the beginning indicator of every form of disease in the body, and definitely my thrill to be stepping it up a notch in the realm of triaging you into holistic medicine. I'm going to be doing house calls, and I'm going to be assisting you in your journey to wellness by getting you plugged into this fine community that is conservative. We talk about that all the time, but those amazing individuals and educators and services are there, and I'm going to pull that all together, and I'm going to plug you in. In natural medicine, we don't tell you what to do. We plant seeds. We shake you down a little bit. We want you to get your head out of the sand, and we want you to get educated, in the driver's seat, proactive. It's a matter of life or death right now. It isn't a matter of slipping through the cracks anymore. I see it all the time as a nurse of 36 years in this community. It is time to get serious about your health and give you serious information on 94.9 FM here at CHRW and our show, Body, Mind, Spirit. One of the announcements I do want to make, we're really excited about taking over the Elmhurst Inn May 7th and 8th, 24 hours, freedom to choose, freedom to change. It is an exciting event where we are going to be giving you all the things, including a pajama party for the women that choose to come hang out for that 24 hours. Think about it. We've got Friday night drinking and thinking. We've got midnight massage, the goddess walk. We're going to have Tai Chi, keynote speakers. We're ready to take over the Elmhurst, so stay tuned. If you're not in the loop, please call me at 667-0666, and we will definitely get you in the loop. For the listeners that want to catch any of our archived shows, I want you to go on to chrwradio.com/archive and just change that archive to listen if you want to listen to future shows on your computer. If you can't find us on 94.9 FM. So, my guest today has been on before. I realize, very interestingly, we were talking the last time Pam Colleen was on the show with me, we were talking in depth about vaccinations, about her amazing book that she co-authored with Dr. Mercola, very well respected in North America. And if I'm not mistaken, there's something out there that he's the number one hit site holistically. He stimulates a lot of thought and makes a connection in all the little nooks and crannies to get people looking in a different way towards holistic medicine. But the bird flu hoax was the name of the book. Well, we just substituted bird flu for swine flu. So we're going to be talking about that. And we're going to be talking about a whole slew of things with Pam, who's an educator, as I said, an author. But I love the investigative reporter. I love the nitty gritty. This is uncensored today. You are going to get the bottom line information from the expert on really what's going down in the shift of medicine, nutritionally, and all the exciting new books she's got coming down the pipeline. So, Pam, I'm excited.
I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Always a learning for me, too. So why don't you, for the first time listeners, give a little bit of your background, a little more meat and potatoes than I set up, and let's go from there.
Sure. Well, basically, I've been studying nutrition and natural health now for over 20 years because of my own health concerns. I was basically bedridden for about 12 years with chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia, multiple chemical sensitivities, and I basically had to learn my way out of being chronically ill. And to do that, I knew I had to focus on nutrition. I knew that there was something that I could do to help repair, you know, both deficiencies and toxicities in my body. And after, you know, struggling for so many years, of course, I felt like I had to share that information with others. So I've been doing some writing, interviews, a lot of radio interviews as well to try and share the word to people because, you know, when I look at the numbers, when you look around you and you see just how sick everybody is, I mean, I don't know anybody who's healthy today. And in a world where the standard of care is, you know, conventional medicine, where over 80% of us are destined to die from chronic disease, whether it's cancer, heart disease, or diabetes, you know, we really have to start considering alternatives because this the mainstream system isn't clearly is not working. And so the other element, of course, that I've been studying recently for an upcoming book that I have has to do with the mental, the mood disorders that we're seeing today and addiction.
Huge problem.
And, you know, our mental state as is part and parcel to our overall health. It's not just whether or not you have cancer, heart disease, or diabetes. It's your outlook on life, your ability to feel joy, happiness,
autism,
energy.
ADHD.
You see, and Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, you know, depression, anxiety. All of these problems are also epidemic in today's society. And there is a nutritional component to that. And unfortunately, the mainstream world is not considering nutritional stress as part of the solution to these epidemics.
They're creating more and more medications.
Well, and we know the medications aren't working. I mean, that's the bottom line. If you look at the front cover of Newsweek magazine a few weeks ago, of course, it said very clearly, and the research and the literature says very clearly that antidepressants do not work for mild to moderate depression. Now, they may work for major depression, but even at that, there's still some very debilitating side effects that are associated with these drugs and very deadly side effects that are associated with these drugs, whether they're treating anxiety or depression or both. So we have to consider alternatives. We have no choice today. We have to look at another angle because we know since doctors have been dispensing these drugs over the last, let's just say 30 years, we're more mentally unstable than ever before. So clearly they're not working and talk therapy is not working. There's something else we need to consider. Not to say that there's anything wrong, for instance, with talk therapy, that talk therapy is fine, but we need to use it as an adjunct to something that's a little bit more profound that works,
well,
you know,
talking,
to help.
Talking doesn't help the cells and the toxicity and the chemical imbalance and,
no.
And popping all the pills.
No, we can't. You know, if you look at addiction recovery systems, of course, they have about a 90% failure rate. And what are they using predominantly? They're using talk therapy. You can't talk somebody out of an addiction. You can't talk somebody out of depression. You can't talk somebody out of a sleep disorder. You need to look at whether or not they have a vitamin D deficiency, a B12 deficiency, essential fatty acid deficiency. You need to look at their gut and see whether or not they're producing a lot of chemicals in their gut that are interfering or causing functional deficiencies in the body. So we need to look at all these components. And in my next book, of course, I have interviews with medical doctors, psychotherapists, and so on that are curing both mental disorders and addiction using nutritional therapies. And I have to say one thing is that what I noticed about these people that I interviewed is that they love going to work every day because they actually see their clients or patients get
recover.
Well. Amazing.
Absolutely.
And they love it.
Okay, we're sitting in the core of University of Western Ontario. What are the curriculums doing in the psychology, psychiatry, the medical courses in talking about nutrition or this very connection?
Well, nutritional psychology or nutritional psychiatry is a new field. It is a new field. That's why I felt it critical that I write about it, because I think it needs to be part of the curriculum here at the University of Western Ontario, University of Toronto, you know, throughout North America, because that's where the real solutions lie. And so, you know, really the lab tests are available in the United States in particular. You can't really get these lab tests done in Ontario, unfortunately. Here in Ontario, we're at least 5 years behind the medical system in the United States. So, you know, in the United States, there are special labs that will test for these deficiencies and nutritional deficiencies and physical toxicities in the body and to be able to target what to do in order to help that person revive or revitalize their biochemistry.
And that's not standard fare for mainstream medicine as we know it. There are holistic diagnostics, and that's a different world.
Mm-hmm.
Hair analysis,
mm-hmm.
saliva analysis, all the things that aren't recognizable in the mainstream. And we want to clarify that for the listeners. They want to go to their family doctor and say, hey, I heard this woman speak on CHRW, and it stimulates a lot of thought. I want these tests. classically, your doctors refuse.
Right.
Their
hands, this is simply
bound.
Because they don't know. I mean,
and they don't know. Medical
doctors and nurses want one thing. They want the best for their patients. You know, they want to see their patients get well. That's not the problem. The problem is the system is what's dysfunctional from the top down. And where I teach my classes and where I educate people is about creating a grassroots effort to change this very dysfunctional, unsustainable healthcare system from the bottom up. Because going in and asking your doctor for change or asking your doctor for something that he or she doesn't know about isn't really going to work, because they're under the confinement of saying they have an A to Z manual to follow. You have such and such a condition, you get such and such a drug. And if that doesn't, if what you have to say isn't within that manual, you're not going to get it. It's not going to be available to you. So, you know, for one example, this is a classic example. You can go to almost any doctor here in London, even the top gastroenterologist, and say, you know, doctor, I think I have something called intestinal permeability, leaky gut, or intestinal dysbiosis, which is an imbalance in gut flora. And that doctor will look at you as if you have two heads and say that it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
But then when you go home and you Google it in on search engines like PubMed or Google Scholar, you'll find thousands of hits. So it does exist. And there's lots of research to say, that when you have an imbalance in gut flora, it can really adversely affect how you feel.
And your immunology and all of that.
But they don't have a pill for it. So They're going to say it doesn't exist.
So isn't the actual, and this is what I love about this show, and I love about getting out and speaking as you do, myself included, it's starting at grassroots. The people that are getting in proactive and educated to go and say, respectfully, I want you to partner with my health care. This, I've done the research. I've Googled. I know I've got leaky gut. I understand that that's not something you learn in med school. How can we work together to the next level?
Mm-hmm.
It's awareness and standing firm, not that the physicians are God. And I grew up in that system 36 years ago,
right,
coming out as a fresh off the press registered nurse. I was fearful of the physicians coming to make rounds. And I was fearful, and I was told, you do not question them. I was told and taught to not question them.
Well, we have to start questioning them.
Absolutely.
And we have to start going to the medical schools and educating the medical schools to educate our doctors at a more efficient level. I teach the work of Dr. Weston A. Price, who was a Canadian dentist who traveled around the world, back about 80 years ago, 70 years ago, to determine the fundamental laws of good nutrition and health. And that book that he wrote back in the 1940s, called Nutrition and Physical Degeneration, used to be taught in the medical schools. And then after the Second World War, of course, the rise of Big Pharma came, and the nutrition went to the back burner, or actually just totally disappeared altogether. And so it's still at a level of disappearance. It still doesn't exist in the medical schools. Doctors still graduate from medical schools without any knowledge of nutrition. And the nutrition that they are being taught is just misinformation and disinformation. For example, about 92% of medical doctors today still promote a low-fat diet, which we know doesn't work and which we know causes things like depression. So, you know, we have to turn to, more sound nutrition. And that's why I really appreciate the work of Dr. Price, because he authored the fundamental laws. If you want to know good nutrition, you have to look to Dr. Price, because he lived in an era where we still had primitive tribes that we could study their diets and actually ascertain what the nutrients were that were allowing that society to live a healthy life. And when you hear any nutritional information today, you have to take these things into account. And I'm going to give people four main criteria to look for when they're hearing any nutritional information today. And that has to do with looking at whether or not couples are fertile, babies are healthy, whether or not people are aging without chronic disease or mental disorders, and that, of course, these senior citizens must be productive members of society. And that's how you determine what is a healthy diet. And with Dr. Price's fundamental bottom line, you know, we can actually determine that. And we can see that today, based on his observations, we are eating a diet today that is diametrically opposed to the diet of our healthy ancestors. You know, we're 100 times more likely to be depressed today than we were 100 years ago. What has happened over the last 100
years?
Well,
a lot. So how do you go back and live the world of Dr. Price when we can't? Everything is bastard. The soil. Now, with the age of antibiotics, the growth hormones, the things in our meat, the things in our dairy products, all of these things that are occurring, GMO, all these degenerative things for our food and the quality of our food. How do we go back and live the Dr. Price
lifestyle? You know, we all used to be hunter-gatherers, so we used to spend a lot of time focusing on food, not just hunting and gathering, but preparation as well. And, of course, we hardly spend any time preparing or seeking out our food today. So
you drive through.
Exactly. So I think people can, and in today's modern age, we can spend a little bit more time, you know, sourcing out our foods. And so, fortunately, in London, we do have some farmers doing what I call authentic agriculture, where the animals are outside on pasture, basking in the sun, getting their vitamin D, and from pasturing, of course, they get their carotenoids from the grass, which converts into vitamin A, and those are the key nutrients, actually, that Dr. Price was able to hone in on, that the fundamental laws included eating adequate amounts of vitamin A and D from eating adequate
organic
amounts.
Right?
Well, these were wild or you know, grass-fed, basically, but the vitamin A and D are really the bottom line. If you're not getting enough vitamin A and D in your diet, then in all likelihood, you're not going to be feeling well. In healthy cultures, they got adequate amounts of vitamin A and D. And unfortunately, today we're being totally misinformed on those two very nutrients and where they're being found. And so when you hear, or for instance, if you read on a can of tomatoes that there's vitamin A in that can of tomato, it's not vitamin A, it's actually beta-carotene. So be very careful, people. Buyer beware. Vitamin A is found in things like liver, eggs, and butter, especially from, you know, grass-fed sources. And, of course, they have to synthetically add it to dairy products because these cows aren't on pasture. They're being factory farmed, and they're being fed food that just doesn't render, create vitamin A in that animal's body. So, you know, to make sure you're getting enough vitamin A and vitamin D in your body, you know, things like cod liver oil are crucial. Buying from local farmers that are pasturing their animals is crucial.
Now, speaking of which, tell us who those how do we get that meat?
Well,
people are going to want to
one have. Simple way is to go down to the downtown market and ask around at the butchers that are there and ask and see if they have grass-fed meat. And I mean grass-fed from birth. You know, the mothers obviously had to have pasture as well. So you just
not
ask.
Not grass-fed the week before.
Yeah, this is only going to happen through grassroots activism. This is going to happen through, it's going to be driven by consumers. So you have to go to places where you're more likely to find these types of foods, and the downtown market or the farmers markets are the good place to start. I know the downtown market has a brochure that they publish with all the names and addresses and contact information for local farmers. Great resource. So certainly go that route if you want to find.
Now, I want you to, for the people that want to Google and listen, get on, what's your website? How do they get a hold of you? And do you have a book list or how would
I
they
do?
Get
I have
book?
A book page that I just, you know, so people can actually see some of the top books that I recommend. My website is pamkaleen.com, and I do have some lectures ongoing at the downtown library at Central Library. Some are coming up this spring. Unfortunately, one of them clashes with your event on May the 8th, but that's nutritional. That class is called Nutritional Help for ADD and ADHD. And on June the 5th, I'm doing Simple Solutions for Bad Digestion. So, and then this coming fall, September, October, I have four Saturdays, my intensive class, which is called What's Wrong with Politically Correct Nutrition? How Healthy Eating is Making Us Sick. So that one's coming up in September and October.
Now, there's some things that we want to get to as well. You talked about making a change, overcoming the big pharma, the political battle, how the individual person can get involved. But there's a shift occurring. We already feel it in our practices and being out there. The shift is occurring. But let's get right down to the nitty-gritty of how detrimental that has been to us, society as a whole. Let's talk about, we alluded to some of the current media covering some of the problems with antidepressives and things like that.
Right. Well, when you're taking a pill and it's, you know, you're swallowing it and it's altering your brain chemistry, can't food do the same thing? This is the irony behind, you know, why they're ignoring food and nutrition, especially in the field of psychiatry. You know, isn't that strange? You're swallowing food, it's affecting your brain. You're swallowing a potentially toxic chemical and it's altering your brain. Not for the better, of course, because these drugs, what they do is they damage your brain. That's essentially how they're designed to work. They're damaging an already damaged brain. If you look at the work of Dr. Peter Bregan, who's a psychiatrist, and he's written books like Toxic Psychiatry and Medication Madness, I mean, it's very, very clear that the people taking these drugs, unfortunately, have extremely adverse effects to them. But, you know, a lot of people say, Pam, you know, who starts your car in the morning? You're saying all these things and you're targeting huge industry affecting their bottom line potentially. You know, what's happening out there? And I say, listen, the heads of Eli Lilly, the heads of Janssen, Johnson & Johnson, the heads of these companies selling these drugs and all their workers and their distributors and sales reps and all this sort of stuff, they're sick. Their mothers are sick. Their aunts are sick. Their uncles are sick. Their neighbors are sick. Their kids are sick. We have a sick system. Everybody I know is sick with something. So they can't keep looking to their own remedies. They have to look outside of the box.
They have to.
They have no choice. Our chief medical officer here in Ontario, I'm sure he's got relatives who are sick. They've got to catch on eventually that these drugs are not working. And that's it. They're just not working. And so that's thanks to people like you and other holistic practitioners who are out there, you know, at a grassroots level, helping people one by one who are falling out from that system, that very dysfunctional and sustainable system. And we have to keep giving people the right answers. We have to teach people the fundamental laws of nutrition first and foremost. We can't be teaching them about food fads that are only going to potentially starve their nervous systems. You know, the work of Dr. Price is clear. It's etched in stone. I mean, there's just, you cannot refute his information. It's just black and white. You see that cultures that diminish their quantities of vitamin A and D in their diet, that's when you start to see disease come in. That's when you start to see the mood disorders come in. It's not rocket science, folks. And, you know, when I teach my classes, I tell people I shouldn't be the one teaching these classes. It should be our chief medical officer. It should be a professor from the University of Western Ontario. Why aren't they teaching these classes? Why am I, as a layperson, teaching these nutrition classes? It shouldn't be me.
It's all about the cleanup and the Band-Aid and the quick fix, and that's very unfortunate. But you can also go into the realm of medical malpractice. You can look at the number one killer being some of the things that are the mainstream mentality about how to treat breast cancer, for example. Look at the woman in Windsor who had her breast removed in error. And then the cleanup and the silence, which it was the only case. Well, it wasn't the only case.
No, she had had a lot of slaps on the wrist.
Yes.
Yeah, and here's the thing, is Ideas on CBC, and I put this was such a profound interview on CBC, I actually put it on my website, where basically they're saying that all of these testing modalities have not improved the quality of our health whatsoever. And there's been research published in the United States through a group called Health Affairs, which shows very clearly the more money we're spending on healthcare, the worse off we are. I mean, I think people know that. So all these all this fancy equipment, all these millions and billions of dollars going into testing us for our health, it's not helping us. Yeah. So we need to go back to basics.
Exactly.
And what the basics translate to is not profit. It's an unprofitable modality. That's what it's called in technical terms. You don't make money teaching nutrition, you know, and so that's why people ignore that element. And yet, you know, we have no choice.
So what's happening in the U.S. right now with the debate about health care? Let's just allude to that before we have to take a break.
Well, like I said earlier, over 80% of the population is dying from chronic disease. It doesn't matter if it's public or private health care. They're still going to be dying at that rate. So it's really just taking our eye off the target to debate over...
Smokescreen.
Yeah, it's a smokescreen. To create a debate over this issue is not going to be helping us with our health either. You know, but if you look at the bottom line, I mean, I think in the 1800s, you know, when we had a lot of choice in healthcare, and we did, by the way, in the 1800s. So we had all sorts of holistic practitioners in the 1800s,
yes,
all over the place. If somebody wasn't doing their job, they didn't get the business, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was more of a free market idea back in the 1800s. And then Flexner Report was written in the early 1900s, which was basically handed healthcare over to allopathic medicine, which we know has been an abysmal failure in chronic disease over the last 70 years or so, 80 years.
It has its place. And we always say that
it
in an acute care situation, and we have to respect that, but it is brutally lacking in the main premise of staying healthy, being healthy nutritionally speaking.
In chronic disease.
Absolutely.
Disease. And we need to work together. Like I said, these people go to medical school because they genuinely want to see people get well. It's the system that's incorrect. It's not the medical doctors and the nurses. It's the system.
And the system is wrapping the knuckles fast and hard, even to the point of death threats for some of the out-of-the-box physicians. I mean, I was called the voodoo nurse 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And you get wrapped. You get this fear-based thing going on that how will we elicit change? Mm-hmm. It's the big pharma. But we're seeing a shift, aren't we?
Oh, we are. I mean, and I think people are starting to see through, you know, like the quack watch and things like that. I mean, this is a fellow who has been paid by the pharmaceutical industry to go after anybody doing nutritional health and or natural health. And, you know, the irony behind that is if you see anybody on that quack watch list, generally speaking, you probably want to go see them if you're sick, because that means they're probably getting people well. You know,
all right. Yeah, well, crazy. More about the quack watch. It's Pat Kennedy on Body, Mind, Spirit 94.9. Stay tuned. You're at the edge of your seat. You got a little more of the song. I love it. We really want to shake you down. And the energy, we're just blowing the top off this little room we're in today with Pam Colleen, who is, let's get down to the nitty gritty. Just because the flu season and the flu shot hype and all the myths about the flu are passe for a lot of us, let's get right into it. Let's roll up our sleeves. Give us the facts on what the European community right now is thinking about what went on in North America.
Well, I think most people know we've been duped. I mean, this whole swine flu hoax has just gotten, it went way out of proportion. I mean, the end result in the United States, the last figure I heard was only 20% of the population was vaccinated, which is actually pretty good news that people are starting to catch on in terms of looking at history and seeing how we've been duped during several other periods as well. But the Council of Europeans in just a few weeks ago announced they're launching an investigation. And this was propelled by some British politicians who were a little suspicious about all the hype.
So Britain's very involved in
this. Yes, it was launched by the Brits through the Council of Europeans. And so, you know, it's things like, you know, Dr. Mercola and myself and several other people have said, you know, isn't it interesting that the people who are the top advisors to the governments have happened to be paid representatives for the vaccine industry? There seems to be a huge conflict of interest here.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think about the top advisor to the CDC being a guy by the name of Paul Offit, and his nickname is Paul for Profit Offit, I mean, would you take anything he says seriously? He's paid millions of dollars every year for his efforts. He's paid by Merck. He's in bed with the vaccine industry, and yet the CDC takes his information as gold.
So they're all in bed together. How do we fight this?
Well, I think hopefully the Council of Europeans will be able to expose that it was basically all just hype. I mean, a press release today goes a long way when the media has a lot of cutbacks and they don't have to do their research.
So what will happen, Pam? We can't all move to Europe. Okay, then they slap us in the face with kind of the mainstream and what's the premise and the myth of vaccinations being the be-all, end-all, then what do we do? Where do we go?
Well, let me take a step back, because, you see, we're seeing a push for these vaccines, whether it's Gardasil or the swine flu vaccine or whatever the case may be, we're going to keep seeing over the near future, the next few years, we're going to start seeing more and more of a push for vaccines as being the hero, right? We, in this medical model, in this medical mafia, they very easily and very artfully paint the villain. And then, boof, here they come as the hero, right? And so they can oppress us and make us subjected to their manipulations by putting us in this fear mode, and then we have to turn to them as having the hero, having the solution to these problems. And so what's happening in the pharmaceutical industry is that the shares are going down because the drugs aren't working where chronic disease is concerned. So they can see where the vaccines are extremely profitable. And you know, they really don't have to spend a lot of money on marketing because they have public health to do the marketing for them for free.
How convenient.
Isn't that a little cozy deal? If you think you go to university, you work for public health, do you really think that you have visions and dream at night of being the marketers for the vaccine industry? No, I don't think anybody in public health really understands how they're being used by the vaccine industry, which they very, very readily are. They are, you know, they're justifying their jobs on a daily basis by perpetuating these fear-mongering campaigns. When the government hands over $1 billion to public health here in Canada, pandemic preparedness, so they can stay in their jobs. But, you know, you have to understand that public health finished their jobs years and years ago at the advent of better, improved hygiene and sanitation. When you start to see where they're chlorinating and filtering city water and rates of infectious disease go down to a nominal amount, so low that today infectious disease only represents about 6.7%, 6.7% of all deaths. You're more likely to die from an injury or an accident today than you are from an infectious disease. There's not going to be a pandemic. And I'm not the one saying this. It's experts, it's other people.
This is what
I
want to know for those listeners. This isn't just your personal opinion. This is your investigation, all backed by research. Mm-hmm. These aren't just frivolous claims.
No.
This is out there, and you're not the one and only. You're representative of a very massive group of individuals all over the world.
All over the world.
Absolutely.
There's scientists that are fighting back and saying, you know, we have to do right by the consumer and stop these fear-mongering campaigns. And we have to smarten people up at public health to say, you know, why aren't you really doing your jobs? Why, you know, when 84.7% of the population is dying from chronic disease, and in 2003, the World Health Organization said that processed foods cause chronic disease and obesity, why isn't public health lining up in the middle aisles of a grocery store, putting warning labels on all these very toxic, very nutrient deficient processed foods?
And the average person doesn't know that fact, Pam.
I know. Well, the media won't talk about it because who are their sponsors? The processed food industry. So, you know, we have to be more discerning. The public health has to come forward to do their jobs and stop being the free marketers for the vaccine industry. It's just, you know, we have epidemics. We have pandemics. They're called cancer, heart disease, and diabetes. That's where
Absolutely.
We should be focusing our energies. And we know that it's the processed foods that are causing these problems. I mean, they went to great lengths to get labeling on cigarettes, didn't they?
Yes, they
to
make, did.
To warn us about cigarettes.
Yes.
But why aren't they doing the same thing, warning us about processed foods? We know when you look at your biscuits and you look at your crackers and your potato chips and your French fries that they're loaded with acrylamide. And the World Health Organization in 2002 put out a warning about the neurotoxicity of acrylamide in these crispy, crunchy, fried or heavily baked foods, right? Nothing was done. Nothing was done. We know about the trans fat myth, I mean, or the trans fat dangers. And
butter versus margarine.
You know, and butter is a sacred food, folks. Stay away from those. Any oil or partially hydrogenated spread or margarine, just stay away from them. They're not natural for our bodies, really. I mean, at any level. So just stay away from the middle aisles of the grocery store where, you know, they're loaded with anything from canola, cotton, corn, and soy. Canola, cotton, corn, and soy. If you see any of those ingredients on a package, stay away from it, you know, and understand. You probably shouldn't be in the middle aisles anyway.
Exactly. Well, I mean, reading labels, the average consumer is mind-boggled because not only do they change the verbiage, and they it's the same toxic substance. When we're on to them, they change the verbiage. They make it into something else. And the average person has no clue now. How do you, for the hidden parabens and things in skincare and all the different terminology that can be used for that same toxic component, how do we do that as a, on a consumer level? It's hard.
Right, you're right. I tell people you stay within your comfort levels because, you know, everybody today is sick, basically. So we really have to make it so that it's translatable and easy for people to understand. So when you start talking about environmental toxicology and the soaps and the scents and the fragrances and how toxic they are, especially to, say, for instance, your endocrine system or your neurotransmitters in your brain, you know, people need to be very educated and motivated to learn about all that information. Generally speaking, a simple answer is to just, you know, stay away, just, you know, use unscented products. You know, if in a nutshell, I'd say that's probably one simple thing people can grasp onto. But in where food is concerned, yes, I want people to investigate buying food from a local farmer, and that may take some energy, maybe a little extra money. It's well worth it in the end. But if they can't do that, then at least stick to the outer periphery of a grocery store. And never buy anything that says low fat. I mean, always buy, if you're buying dairy products, make sure they're always high in fat.
Well, Lipitor is, in the soil. And these anti-cholesterol drugs, I mean, this is big business. This is, once again, big pharma. Mm-hmm. And so telling you in this whole low-fat campaign, how do you get that message out to the average person?
Okay, let's talk about that. Let's look at common sense. When you look at the work of Dr. Boston A. Price, where people are getting adequate amounts of vitamin A and D coming from animal fats, and they're radiantly healthy compared to we are today. These nutrients that are in animal fats, I mean, they support your endocrine system. They support your nervous system. We need these nutrients, and we're not getting them, and because we're avoiding the fats. And when you're avoiding animal fats, What does that mean? You're turning to maybe vegetable-based fats, which we know cause heart disease, cancer, and diabetes, or you're turning to more carbohydrates. So in a nutshell, people have to look to history again to say what happened in 1950, what happened after the Second World War. Before the Second World War, we weren't fat phobic. We enjoyed
fat phobic. I like that term.
We were not fat phobic. I mean, if our ancestors saw us today being fat phobic, they would be rolling over in their graves. They knew that animal fats were healthy for them, and so before the Second World War, we ate 3 square meals a day, and those 3 square meals included adequate amounts of animal fat. After the Second World War is when you start to see the fat phobia start coming up, and it was really an event in science where somebody had a theory. They said, you know, animal fats and cholesterol had joined the dark side. That cholesterol caused heart disease. And you know what? That has never been proven. It has never been proven to be true. What has happened over the last 50 years is we've increased our consumption of the highly processed vegetable oils, and we've decreased our consumption of butter, a sacred food, and we've increased our consumption of carbohydrates. And it's that process. It's by increasing our carbohydrates and these very synthetic oils and fats that has caused the inflammation in our bodies, and that is what's really causing heart disease. And that's really what cholesterol is all about. It's an inflammatory condition, and it's provoked by these synthetic foods that we shouldn't be eating as much of as we are.
So the listeners that are out there that have never heard any of this information are going, oh my God, they're just like, where do I begin? Pam, help us simplify this. What's the best way to start? Okay, good advice. Shopping on the outer part, not the processed foods. Getting back into the kitchen, making things, going to our farmer's market, going out there and searching out organic, where we know the source and local. But the toxic world we live in, it is very difficult to escape. This toxic world didn't exist pre-Second World War as it is today. The dioxins and the parabens.
And you know, these nutrients I'm talking about help with the detoxification process. So if you're getting enough vitamin A and D, then hopefully, you know, you've got really good detoxification. Your liver's working well. Your gallbladder's working well. You can detoxify all these heavy metals and dioxins or whatever the case may be. So, you know, we really need to stay on top of what it means to be able to properly detoxify, and nutrients are involved in that process. Yeah. So, you know, what I tell people is to visualize the way your great-great-great-grandmother or grandfather would have eaten. Don't be afraid of a bacon and egg breakfast. Like they've set us, you know, the fear of God in us by eating bacon and eggs.
So we're eating it healthy. And we're stressed out, and it's a double whammy.
Right, but you're worse off eating boxed cereal, for crying out loud, you know? And so, you know, eat your bacon and eggs for breakfast. Stabilize your blood sugar by eating adequate amounts of animal protein and animal fat.
So having said that, we know one thing clearly. Glutathione in every cell is a big detoxifier and guardian. Now, vegetarians are extremely depleted in glutathione, classically speaking.
Right, because you see, for glutathione to be built in the body, you have to have two precursors. You have to have vitamin B6 and zinc. Those two nutrients happen to be best found in animal foods. B6 in particular is best found in raw animal foods, like raw dairy products, which I'm a huge fan of course. And zinc, of course, is best found in things like red meat. So because we're avoiding these foods, we're not getting adequate amounts of B6 and zinc, so we're not going to be building enough glutathione in the body, which is a very powerful detoxifier, very powerful antioxidant in the body. So we have to look at the grassroots, what's forming that glutathione.
So let's go back to your own personal dilemma. You used to be vegan.
Oh, I was a strict vegetarian.
A recovering vegetarian.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, I love that. So what about the vegetarians that are listening? How do you make sense of this new world, this new train of thought?
Well,
for them, it's new.
It possibly is new for many people. And unfortunately, they're being terribly, dangerously misinformed. I was dangerously misinformed back in the 1990s. But fortunately, the good news is the misinformation is being exposed. You can go online, come to my classes, and I'll educate people over how we're being misled in the area of moving us towards more of a vegetarian-based food supply. You know, people have to understand, I mean, feeding millions of people in small geographic areas is much easier to do promoting a plant-based diet. And, you know, because plant-based foods are easier to produce, easier to ship, they have better shelf life, and they're more profitable than animal foods. So this push towards more of a vegetarian-based diet is really coming from everything from the World Bank down. And unfortunately, is doing us a huge disservice. disservice. And that's why we're seeing such incredible rates of chronic disease and even mood disorders. And the rise of mood disorders is expected to get worse, by the way, folks. So where people who are following more of a plant-based diet, you're going to start seeing poor memory, irritability, personality disorders, fatigue. You're going to see, obsessive-compulsive behaviors. Their brain is starving for some really key nutrients, and they're not going to get it by eating too many plant-based foods.
So the European, getting back to the European community versus the North American community, there's a real budding of heads here.
Oh, well, let me tell you something about that.
Yeah,
first of
tell
all,
me.
Where you see, for instance, the mood disorders, especially depression, all right, it's happening in English-speaking countries pretty much only, all right? In European countries, you do not see the rates of depression and so on as you're seeing in the English-speaking countries.
Well, they like to eat meat.
They're not organic. As easily deceived. They're eating their butter, they're eating their lard, they're eating their animal fats. They're not fat phobic like we are in English speaking worlds. And it's a fascinating observation made by a psychologist in England by the name of Oliver James. And when I heard him saying that, I said, of course he's right. Because I lived in Europe, and in Europe, you see the markets with their fresh foods and their fresh meats, and people are eating 3 square meals a day more so than we are here.
And buying fresh, picking it up, absolutely.
Yeah, so the brain needs a very critical
butter
nutrients.
On that crusty French bread and hunks of cheese sliced off. You know, it's a different train of thought. So they're finally calling us on our actions.
Right. Well, I mean, I think people are the information. I mean, I connect the dots in such a way because I had chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia, and I had to learn the fundamentals of deficiency and toxicity to fix my biochemistry. And when I was able to put those dots together, I said, well, it's not just me. This is people struggling with everything from, dementia, Alzheimer's, autism, because, you know, chronic fatigue, the nickname for chronic fatigue is adult autism. So I know essentially what a child with autism feels like. Biochemistry, the physiology, you know, everything that put my body out of whack is really what needs to be addressed, even for autism or dementia, you know. There's nothing complicated about what I am telling people. The most complicated thing for me is to get through the misinformation and disinformation. And that's why my classes are so lengthy, and that's why they're so loaded. And I put so much research into my classes because I know what we're up against.
You have to have the facts. You have to have the goods, most definitely. And people are fearful if you don't, and then they're still fearful. When are your next classes again? Tell us again, because I know this is going to stimulate a lot of anticipation for how do people hear more of Pam Colleen here in our community. You're a diamond in the rough for being an activist, and your whole premise is to get healthy nutritionally. Let's get real.
Yeah. And I really hope that, you know, professors from the University of Western Ontario from the medical school will start attending my classes, and eventually integrate some of these classes into the university. But I have on the May the 8th, Saturday, May the 8th, I have a class called Nutritional Help for ADD and ADHD. I have on June the 5th, I have Simple Solutions for Bad Digestion. This fall, I have a class coming up called What's Wrong with Politically Correct Nutrition, How Healthy Eating is Making Us Sick. And I have another class that I haven't programmed, but it's a popular class. It's called How to Fix a Broken Brain. People like that class. It's lengthy and it's loaded, but it's really just about returning to basics. Why we need to return to eating 3 square meals a day. I mean, think about it, Pat. I mean,
that's how we grew up.
Yeah, in the 1940s, people ate 3 square meals a day, and they were physically and mentally more robust than we are today. Now, how complicated is it to understand that premise? It's not complicated. 3 square meals? I think, I was eating at 7 in the morning, eating at noon, eating at 6 o'clock.
You know what's brutal, though, Pam, and I've noticed? The younger generations don't know how to make anything from scratch because they haven't had to.
Listen, I've met people in their 60s today who don't know how to make anything from
scratch. It's unbelievable.
Cooking food from scratch is a survival skill today. It really is. It has to be returned into the home, and we have to stop eating on the run. And if you are eating on the run, make sure you're doing it properly. Just a few extra minutes a day preparing, a lunch bag or something like that. But to understand the concept of nutrient density, and that's what Dr. Price studied. He studied nutrient density in foods. He took samples of foods from primitive cultures all around the world. He sent them into his lab in Cleveland, Ohio, and he was able to determine that primitive cultures that were healthy ate 10 times the fat-soluble vitamins than we do today, and at least 4 times the minerals than we do today. Because of industrialized agriculture, of course, we're deficient in minerals. Because our adrenal glands are so stressed, we're not keeping our mineral balance, and heavy metals are moving in. And that's, of course, interrupting with everything from osmosis in the cell to how our neurotransmitters
it's
work
brutal.
In our brain. And so we've got to get all these systems under control if we expect to be healthy as a society. And I think we can do that. I think there's a revolution
wow.
going on.
Wow. Okay. We have a caller in. Josh, have you got a question for our guest, Pam Killeen?
I have two, and they're not related.
Okay.
One about acrylamide, which you mentioned a little while ago. I've heard about that before. Tried doing that Google search, like you suggested, a long time ago. And it came across as being something that's already in, say, the potatoes that are making the potato chips, but that it is triggered because of the really high cooking temperature.
That's right. It's a Maillard reaction. It's done when you have a sugar and an amino acid, and it's heated to a certain temperature, and that's what causes acrylamide. If you think about the word acrylamide, by the way, think of the root word in it, acrylic. So it's basically producing plastic in the food. So you have everything from French fries to potato chips, cookies and crackers and so on that are relatively high in acrylamide. And Health Canada, by the way, just put acrylamide on its list of most toxic substances, and there's about 200 substances on that list.
It made the list.
It made the list finally last November, yeah. People have been fighting for that for a long time. And in California, of course, there are some activists, food activists, who are trying to get acrylamide labeled on food. And I think I know that there's efforts going on to do that here in Canada as well.
It's about time.
Mm-hmm.
Another question, Josh?
Yes, about sharing the information. I recently came across a not-so-new internet approach through the TED.com talks, and it was something, the website was CNX.org. The idea being you can create your own textbook, people can read it online, and if they want, they could order sort of on-demand print copy as well. Mm-hmm. Have you looked into, are there these sorts of outlets that are being used, being taken advantage of?
I can't speak specifically to any systems like that. I know that there are a lot of people who are, you know, promoting and selling or exposing their ebooks online through different systems. TED.com is a social, they promote a lot of socially responsible concepts through their videos and so on. But I will look into that. I appreciate that information.
Thank you for calling, Josh. Really appreciate you listening to the show.
Can you recommend somewhere I could go to see, you're saying, promoting the ebooks? Is there a central directory that you would recommend?
No, I wish I could, actually. I really can't. Oh, by the way, I just had a thought. On speaking of socially responsible films, the documentary Food Incorporated is going to be on at the Central Library on April the 27th, and it's free night. It starts at 6:30, and I'm actually emceeing the event. So, Josh, I hope you can make it out to that.
All right, thanks for letting me know.
Beautiful. And for all of our other listeners, we want more, because you speak so with conviction, with the research, the things that maybe we know, and you hit the nail on the head.
Well,
for
I think
us,
young
Pam.
People today know they're being cheated. When you look here at the university, I've been told that there are more women taking Prozac on campus than there are taking birth control pills. And we know that Prozac doesn't work for mild to moderate depression. They're handing out these pills like candy. I mean, they've done surveys to show that in many cases, people are being prescribed antidepressants, even though they're just going through a stressful situation in life, and it's nothing to do with depression.
Even younger mm-hmm. than university age.
Mm-hmm.
Kids that are 12, 11, 12, 13, mm-hmm. Getting put on antidepressants.
Well, and depression is not a Prozac deficiency. You know, ADD and ADHD are not Ritalin deficiencies. There are very clear and distinct, nutrient deficiencies and toxicities affiliated with all of those conditions.
So, now, isn't this part of your upcoming book or mm-hmm, books that mm-hmm. you've got coming down the pipeline?
Yeah.
Give us an idea of what you're going to get out there
Oh, the book that I have right now that should have been, unfortunately, was supposed to have been published in September, and it wasn't, but it's called Addiction, the Hidden Epidemic. And really, when it comes right down to it, addiction is the fundamental problem. You know, to get people well today, you have to identify their addictions, and even food addictions. And that's why carbohydrates are very addictive. And it's very difficult. It's one of the reasons why it's very difficult for me to convince people to eat more things like meat and eggs and chicken, because they're addicted to the carbohydrates, and it's a physiological addiction. And so, you know, that's why people get roped in. That's why people are stuck in such a vicious cycle. So I wrote a book on addiction because I wanted people to understand that to get rid of those addictive cravings, there are very key things that you need to do to satisfy, you know, that particular appetite. And that has to do with eating enough animal fat. Animal fat is there for us to curb a lot of those addictive cravings. In simple terms, of course, I'm oversimplifying a rather complex situation. But in my book, it's a compilation of interviews, basically, from health practitioners who are curing addiction, curing mood disorders, using very sound nutritional principles. And as I mentioned earlier, these health practitioners love going to work every day because they get to see their clients and patients get well. And really, it comes down to eating 3 square meals, you know, testing thyroid, testing adrenal, testing blood sugar levels, not the way they do here in Ontario, because they're antiquated systems here in Ontario. They use more sophisticated testing procedures in the United States. And they can really identify where people have functional deficiencies in, say, the area of thyroid gland, you know, because, you know, people take thyroid and 2 or 3 months into taking thyroid medication, it's not working because they're not identifying the fundamental imbalance, which has to do more with the adrenal gland, you see, and that has to do with stress and blood sugar problems. And I mean, if I can learn this, anybody can learn this. But I know I could go to any endocrinologist here in London, and they won't know anything of what I'm talking about. They'll look at me as if I have 2 heads. But I mean, I had to learn this stuff to get myself well. So, and if I can do it, anybody can do it, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, it certainly is a lot of food for thought.
It is.
That's quite a statement. And give us your contact information again. I know that, and the list of books that you have linked on your site is a great starting point.
Yeah, it can be, you know, if people, these books that I have on my website are just there as visuals. If people want to go down and check and see if they're at the library, the library probably does carry a lot of them because I've been recommending so many of these books for a few years now.
Absolutely.
So, you know, you can go and get a good look at some of the books that I recommend. My website is pamkilleen.com, K-I-L-L-E-N.com. And like I said, I have some classes coming up at the Central Library this spring and into the fall. And I do some phone consultations with people who are really stuck. I only really like to do phone consultations with my students who've seen my PowerPoint presentations and may have some questions with regards to, you know, clarification or whatever the case may be.
Which is fantastic. You know what I would love to see, and I've been wanting this for a very long time. I don't want to call it a debate, but I want to talk about the different forms of medicine, individuals involved in medicine, to pull them together to get kind of a full spectrum right in front. So a medical doctor.
Well, you need a think tank is basically what you need. I mean, you need somebody to get these people together to come up with viable solutions and concrete solutions that actually do get people
absolutely
well.
And I think here, and throwing out the challenge to the University of Western Ontario, I mean, we're planting those seeds. We have the people in our very community. I would love to have that out there, most definitely. Well, Pam, I'm telling you, excellent hour, always goes too fast. We are so looking forward to all your events upcoming, your lectures and your books. You are up there rubbing noses with all the big honchos in holistic, shake down the old pharma, big pharma mentality,
right,
in all of North America and Europe. And we love that about you, and you're in our very community. That's what we want to do here, stimulate thought, shake people down. It's time to get their heads out of the sand.
It is. It's about returning to common sense.
Yes.
I mean, it's, and there's, like I said,
simplicity.
There's no money in that. You know, unfortunately.
There's the drag.
Yeah.
I mean, and the simple, basic principles. So anyway, signing off, Pat Kennedy for CHRW Body, Mind, Spirit. Please get on chrwradio.com/archive. Get a copy of this. Share the wealth of Pam's info and stimulating comments today with everybody you care about. And we will be back next week for another rockin' show. Thanks.
Thanks, Pat.